Welcome to episode 59 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Wow. Today is November the 4/11. As a typo.
Oh, sorry. Fixed.
There we go. Today is November the 11th, 2012. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my bro host-elect, James Furlough.
Yes! I did it! I'm here.
You did it? You won the election?
I did. You opted to do the podcast with me. It was neck and neck. I wasn't sure for a while, but turned out okay.
Hey, man. That's what we're here for close calls.
And I was actually at a retreat this weekend, so it was kind of a, hey, I got to get back in time, do the podcast.
Nice. The radio show that I regularly listen to in the morning, one of their producers always refers to the president as the president-elect because he messed up the swearing in at the... Yeah, because I don't know if you remember, but he said the oath wrong because he memorized a different oath than the judge. Yeah, it was just, and so they had to re-record it later, and he's like, his conspiracy is that the president never actually took the official oath, so therefore he's not the president, and still calls him the president-elect.
Now, do they do it a second time if... You know, if he wins again, just to like reaffirm, hey, yeah, you won.
Or... Yes, sir. They'll do the whole thing again.
I just don't remember. Cool.
Yeah.
So maybe that joke will have to get old.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, man.
He's pretty. Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. Anyways, this week, unlike every week, we're going to be talking about politics, and that's pretty much all that would happen this month. Actually, we're going to try not to talk about politics, but that is pretty much all that happened this week.
We're going to talk about it, but somehow not get political.
Right. Well, you're going to be bipartisan. No, we're going to be nonpartisan. we're going to look at it
from a technology lens. How about that?
Yeah, which
is party agnostic.
Exactly. And because let's face it, after this last week, y'all are tired of politics. I'm tired of politics. I'm not tired of politics.
So we're going to give you a little bit more.
Yeah. But we're going to try to make it enjoyable and interesting. We will be continuing to talk about the corporate opera or soap opera corporations, dealings back and forth, people working for them, the technology they're developing, and the marketing campaigns, and a little bit of the political hurdles that they get to deal with. So before we get into the heart of the show, James got us a short disclosure.
Yes, I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, during this podcast, I do not represent Hewlett-Packard or any of HP's opinion. So whenever referring to Hewlett-Packard, which shouldn't actually happen this week, I should say I, or something like that, HP thinks this instead of saying like we. Anyways.
Cool.
There you go.
If you want to follow us throughout the week, day to day, our personal Twitter accounts, mine is at Matthew D. Furlough.
I am at James Furlough.
And the show Twitter is at Furlough Bros. I promise not to get political on that, although I broke my rule. I really try to keep politics, my personal political leanings off of my social media, because I don't like hearing other people's opinions, because let's face it, they're wrong. And so I don't want to hear other people, so I don't push mine on my friends. But on Wednesday, I snapped.
Wednesday or Tuesday?
Tuesday. Wednesday would have been a little bit late, I suppose.
Dude, how awesome would that be? Just coming out with all your political statements on Wednesday, just afterwards, right. Just like that whole week.
Just vote for this person.
Vote. Especially if you're just like, vote for Romney. You can do it.
There's still time.
Yes.
Come on, Florida.
Funny.
But
we have to
I tried
think
to
about that
I
for the next
once
election.
I know that would be pretty funny. I once again I tried to keep it party agnostic, but I broke down and just splurged on Tuesday.
Happens.
But I promised not to do it again. Wow. Yeah.
Nice.
So,
So this is actually pretty funny, and but I'm glad that we came to the same conclusion. If you look under Wednesday, what's and see the very first news article?
oh, yeah.
But we both came. So I wrote. I copied a news article that was said Microsoft Office for iPhone, iPad, and Android revealed. A little later, Matthew added an article said Microsoft previews Office for iOS. Now here's what's interesting. I go, this just won't die, but I find myself getting less exciting. And your comment was, it's lame. You're much more succinct than I was.
It is lame, and I, we were
Yes,
excited about it.
totally lame. And I am just leave it to Microsoft to take something awesome. And here's what it is. They're trying to do what Apple does, which is, keep you in the ecosystem. So here, let me explain it to you what's going on here.
Thank you.
Okay, how do I do this? So, okay. So obviously, it's the things on your small device. But they and they haven't said much, but it says here that Office Mobile will debut on in the form of three apps that will allow Android and iOS users to view Microsoft Office documents on the move. And what they say is like the existing SkyDrive and OneNote apps, Office Mobile, here's the best part, will require a Microsoft account. So basically, what they're going to do, they are not standalone apps. In order to do anything within Word, PowerPoint, and Excel, it's all done via an Office 365 subscription. And even then, from what I understand, they're dumbed down apps, which I mean, I get it. It's a tablet, so it shouldn't necessarily be the whole thing. And quite honestly, we would probably all whine and complain if it was just the app on a tablet. So I get it. But and I don't know. Do you know what a 365 subscription costs nowadays, if anything, or is that one
I have
free?
no idea.
Yeah,
Let
I
me search
can't.
engine it for us.
Yeah, Office 365 subscription.
Office.
So yeah, Microsoft will allow iOS users to purchase an Office 365 subscription within the app. So I'm going to guess that it's not free.
And so for P, so I we obviously know what an Office 365 is because we pay attention to laws all the time. But for you, those of you who don't know, okay, let's see. Let me give you prices really quick. Hosted email is $4 per user per month.
Dumb.
Small business plan is $6 per user per month. Mid-sized business is $8 per user per month, and mid-sized business in enterprise
Is there
is
just like a
$20 per
individual
month.
one, or is that the very first one?
I think it's the small business plan peer one. I don't know. Cloud-based email, shared calendars, instant messaging, web-based viewing of editing words, blah, blah, blah.
So they're targeting
Team site.
businesses, clearly not consumers.
Right. And but yeah, this was their big challenge to Google Docs,
Yeah, and their whole thing,
which are
which
brilliant and
is
awesome.
kind of weird though, is that it's, yeah, the doc is stored in a server, and so you can edit it. And they say it'll work across Windows Phone, iOS, and Android, and I'm presuming PCs as well. Which is cool. They're just not standalone apps like what we currently purchase today.
Right, and the thing is that it's like I think what's frustrating is we all kind of envisioned when we said we want Office for iOS, we were thinking we want a Pages, Numbers, and Keynote competitor. We want something that allows you to
Yeah.
build things. Maybe not your, okay, I get it. You're not going to put macros into Excel. You're not going to put all of the, but you're going to put the basic functionality that, you're going to put 80% of the functionality into it. And most importantly, you're going to be let us run apps, run, you're going to let somebody build these really powerful spreadsheets and then input data and actually do things on the
Yeah.
fly, not look at stuff that somebody else developed and put into their Sky, you know, put, and
well,
I don't know.
Well, you, if you get the 365 subscription, then you can edit. Otherwise,
yeah,
it's a view only. It's not. It's just not. They have. They're switching it over to a service, software as a service thing, as opposed to, like, now you buy it, you download it, you can create a new doc, you can then save it, you can email it, you can do all sorts of stuff with it, and it lives on your hard drive. And now they're just setting it up where it lives on the server, and you got to be plugged into that.
Which I think is going to drive people to try out and use other services, you know, which, you know, famously on this show, I gave everybody the big runaround trying to find a suitable Word document for a Windows PC, and eventually settled on Word because it was great. But if I can't just, like, use Word for Word, oh man, it would force me to go somewhere else, and I don't want to do that.
What you gotta do is you gotta get the Windows 8 Pro Surface laptop thingy so that you can use the actual document. I mean, that's the plan. Something,
yeah,
dude. I don't know.
I think you're right.
I guess I haven't officially played with it, and no one really has yet, and. You know, until I do, I won't really know, and chances are I'll be disappointed about something.
No, James, it's so much better when we make known proclamations about exactly.
Well, what I do know is when the idea first emerged, I was excited about it. And when I've seen screenshots and stuff of what they're doing with whatever it's going to be, Office 2013 or 10 or whatever they're calling it, you know, the next generation Office, I get excited looking at it and go, oh, that looks cool. I would like to use that. And maybe I was getting excited about that idea, and where they were like, oh, we're making it so that it can have big touch targets and it'll be make sense to use on a tablet. And you come to find out, you're like, oh, but we're attaching some strings. So I don't know. I kind of get why they're doing it, because they're probably sick of the piracy, and you know, you sell it once and then you're done. And this is going to be a way for them to turn it into a subscription model, and you know, turn it into a longer life revenue stream, and they're going to attract a ton of small businesses who have just been waiting for it. I get it. I just don't like it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and they're all like, oh, we'll add features and stuff later as it goes on. Yeah, I'm sure you will. But
right.
I don't even own an iPad. What do I care? But
yeah, you know, there's a certain amount of that in all of this.
Yeah. Oh, well. Less exciting, but that's okay.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, it's it's one of those things where we'll see. We gotta, you know, right now how they're pitching it, they're not making it very exciting, but ultimately time will tell.
Yeah, totally. More exciting news is DC Comics is adopting the Netflix model. Yes,
kind of.
They are now going to be launching their comics on the Kindle store, the iBook store, and the Nook Book store, where you can buy, well, they'll be selling their monthly comics, as you would expect.
Cool.
Batman, Spider-Man, Wonder Woman, Justice League,
Batman,
and the whole bunch. And Spider-Man. Basically what they said is they want to make their comics available on any platform where readers want to find them.
Nice.
Is the idea. So, because originally you had to have like their DC app or this Comixology app in order to see them, but now they're like, no, we're gonna make them native, so you can get it for your Paperwhite and black and white. How exciting is that?
Oh man, it's super exciting.
Which
I probably won't do that.
Kind of weird because it's, you know, color is a big deal, but
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe they will figure out how it works. But yeah, it was. I was like, dude, I love it. They're starting to figure it out slowly and surely, and they're gonna come out with a couple, you know, digital only titles, just so they can really kind of experiment and get crazy, and you know, see how that goes, kind of feel it out. But they truly believe that they're like, no, we're not cannibalizing our print market. We're trying to expand the market, basically. Which makes sense. Chances are their pricing is not favorable, because I think, if I remember correctly, it's $24 a year for like the Superman comic subscription.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. You can buy like up to 3 years, but it's literally just three times as expensive. There's zero discount. which I'm just kind of like, oh, all right, well, cool.
Well, you know, it's one Christmas. You get seven. You get 3 years. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Still an expensive 3 years, but
yeah, it is.
But yeah, you know, whatever. So, and I think so. That's what, $2 a subscription for the paper one. And I think they'll sell them like individually for $3 or $4. So it still makes sense if you're going to get them to be like, eh, give me the paper. It still makes sense. Which they were saying that at least right now, the focus is to create the comics for paper and then, you know, reformat them, whatever that means, you know, big PDFs for handheld devices, for digital.
It'll be interesting. Well, I think one of my big thoughts with paper is that they gotta eventually move over to the model of, in my opinion, of offering a paper copy. You buy a paper copy, and for an extra dollar an issue, you get a digital copy too.
Totally.
I feel like that would be worth a ton. And so you get the day it comes out, you get it on your Kindle, you can read it, but you can also have the paper copy that you can like flip through. I think they should do that with books too. If you pay for a $10 book, you should be able to get the digital copy for an extra buck.
I was talking to a friend where that was the exact thing that he was talking about. And he goes, yeah, like, you know, $1 or $2 more. And because there's people who like, they want to keep the books in mint condition, or they want to have it for their bookshelf. And, you know, there's going to be other stuff where it's like, I could see, oh, I ordered the book, but I'm super pumped. Yeah, you could start reading it literally right now in 30 seconds.
Right.
And then once it gets here, flip on over to, you know, the paper book.
And I have a friend who earlier this week, he was saying, you know, what he likes to do is he really likes to have he wants to read the paper book. That's bar none, that's his preference. The thing is that if you like pick up you pick up and you go somewhere, and this is really ultimately the reason why I bought my Paperwhite, was because, okay, I want to go somewhere, but I don't want to bring seven books with me, or I don't want to bring one book with me. I want to bring one device with all my books.
Yeah, I'm currently reading a book right here. This is how big it is. It's huge. It's bigger.
It's 8.5 by 11 size paper.
A little bit bigger, 400 pages. That thing is a beast to...
It's a textbook.
Yeah, and it reads that way too. But it's a beast to bring with me. And they don't have a Kindle version for that one. Otherwise, I'd be all over it. But yeah, no, it's totally makes sense. Do it. And I'm sure that they might get into it someday. Or, you know, vice versa, right? Buy the Kindle version. Hey, want the paperback one just for the fun of it?
Yeah. Yeah, for the – and it's funny. I think when I – you know, I'm still slowly creeping forward on publishing my book. And that's something that I've thought a lot about, like the idea of, how would I do that? Because I think that that's fair and it would be cool and it would motivate people to buy it. You know, to do a bundled thing, and it's like maybe it's possible to sell it through my own website, and you know, you can download the digital. I don't know how you do it, but something. but it definitely would be. It's one of those things where, man, if you could do that, if you could motivate people to be able to buy stuff where you can bundle it like that, I think that would be you. I don't know.
So, by the way, you're going to have to pay attention to Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Chef. He's also the author of The 4-Hour Workweek and The 4-Hour Body, which is The 4-Hour Chef. It's on my wish list. It's interesting. He talks about how to learn how to do things is the idea. And he does it via cooking to kind of show his learning process and how to go about it. But the point of all this is to say that he is going the Amazon publisher route.
Nice.
And he has been
Crazy.
At last I checked, he has been banned at over 1,100 bookstores.
Why?
Because he is using Amazon as his publisher, and they do not like that. And so it's kind of this huge experiment of, can he get, you know, on the bestseller lists by not being in bookstores? So
wow.
You'll have to. I think it's like the 4-Hour Blog or something like that. If you just search for it.
This guy does not like doing more than 4 hours of anything, does he?
Yeah. Well, you know, he started doing tests, and that title worked really well, and now it's a brand, right? And so he
right
you know keeps with it. But you'll have to do a search, and you'll have to follow it, because I know you're thinking about going a similar model, and you'll have to see what his experience is.
Yeah, definitely. That's it's fascinating.
It is.
Cool. The future. Okay, so you ready for some politics? I'm excited.
I'm pumped, yeah.
All right, so let's get into the start. We'll start off easy with regulation, the wonders of bureaucracies. Google is trying to build self-driving cars, and they're kind of coming out from left field, which is awesome. It's the free market at work. Because, you know, DARPA has been pushing for self-driving cars forever, but that's mostly so they can build machines that can go kill people. Which, you know, it's a pretty good reason to do it, I suppose. you know, it's,
yeah, did but, a car, why not have a self-driving car that can kill people?
You know,
love the idea.
They're like, we'll build the self-driving car and put a gun on it, and then we can sell it as military technology.
And we will call the program, you know, something like Skynet, and it will be wonderful.
Flynet, Binet. I'm feeling the iNet. I haven't settled on the first letter.
That's going to be awesome.
But
that's so weird that they wouldn't approve self-driving cars that can kill people.
I know.
Oh, man.
You remember playing that game? What game was it? It was like Cruising California or something. It was like an arcade style, like racing game.
Yeah.
And they had like a Hummer, and the Hummer, like all the other cars had horns, but the Hummer had a machine gun, and you could shoot cars in front of you. It was awesome. That was the greatest game. But. I think that was when I fell in love with Homer's. I'll be totally honest. I think it was back then. That was probably the game. Anyways, so Google's doing it. Google's moving forward. They're trying to get different districts and states and everybody to sign off on allowing them to do self-driving cars. They started in Arizona, I believe. Or was it Nevada? One of the four corners.
Nevada.
Nevada, which is not actually part of the Four Corners, is it?
No, I think it is.
It is. It's Arizona, New Mexico.
I failed geography.
Nevada,
so
me too.
I can't
We're
help
so
you.
Bad at that.
They would do those tests where you had to, like, you know, list out all 50 states on a blank map, and you had like 3 minutes to do it. I'd be like, "Yeah, I got six."
It's exactly
California, Hawaii, Texas,
dude,
Alaska, Maine, Florida.
It's about to get harder. Well, it's about to get harder to grade them and harder to do them, because instead of it used to be you'd get 2 points per you know, state,
yeah,
and you'd get 100%. Now there's going to be 51 states, and now it's going to be like, how do you even score that? You know, you can't just double it. Well, 102%, that's right. Or maybe, you know, maybe for the first few years, Puerto Rico will just be extra credit. I'm actually really excited about that.
Are they
that.
Becoming a state? I know it was on the ballot. See, you can see how closely I followed election results.
Yeah, so I don't know why, like, for me, see, territories becoming states are like the border region of international politics. And international politics is actually what I really enjoy following, because it's like, is it just so much more of a no man's land, and it's just so much crazier. It's so much fun. And this is the law. And yeah, like I said, territories,
so they're joining.
Are the lawless border
region. When is this
region.
Happening?
So what happens is it's pretty complicated. Basically what they did was they had two votes. One of the votes was, are you satisfied with the current relationship that we have with the United States? And
okay.
And yes was like 40% of the vote. I'm not sure it was like 5%, and then no was
who
like
are these
55%
need those people.
So they like 55% of the vote. So like 15% of the population, what more is unsatisfied than satisfied?
Okay.
And then they polled everybody. The next question of, if you weren't satisfied, what would you want to happen? And like,
whoa, this 40... was a polling or a voting thing?
This is all voting, because okay. It's really weird how it's touted. This is like, so this hasn't happened in like almost
At
a century.
least 2 years.
Yeah, at least 2 years. So there are very few people alive that have ever seen this happen, and there's nobody alive that have seen this happen enough times to really.
Oh,
get
you mean
comfortable
a
with
state
it.
Being added, or just them
Yeah.
considering joining?
Well, a state being added.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
okay. I'm with you. We already got the flag, though, don't we? Like hidden
oh, yeah.
somewhere. We could probably go up to what, like 56 without a problem.
No, it's the dude that got the dude that he. So this is such a great story. The guy who. Came up with the 50 state flags. He, when he was in like elementary school or middle school, he had this project for like, you know, for like the United States. And he came up with this great idea. I'll design a flag. And he designed like the 49 and the 50 flag, or he designed what the 50 flag would look like. And his teacher gave him a C on it. And he was
yes.
so upset that in middle school, he started to campaign to get his flag ratified.
So we have a C-level flag flying for
yeah.
our country. How
well,
appropriate is that?
What was so great about it is eventually he got it all the way up to getting approved and ratified and went back, once the bill was signed off and everything, went back to his teacher and said, I deserve an A. And his teacher was like, are you kidding me? Here's an A. Like, the dude's like 30 now at this point.
That's so awesome. That's like when the FedEx CEO or founder or whatever he is, you know, wrote a paper about this idea of shipping packages overnight via airplanes, and his professor was like, would never work. It's a dumb business idea.
Yeah, just had to prove him wrong.
I just thought you should know that.
Yeah. And
see, that's why academics is dumb, and real corporate world driverless cars are awesome.
Exactly. So I wasn't quite done with my story, but I appreciated the segue. So I was just going to say that this dude got so pumped about getting his 50 star flag ratified that he also got 51 and 52 ratified. So we're ready for two more states. Guatemala, you guys are next. You
got
to go from a protectorate to a territory to a state.
Boom.
And anyways, and
it's
this whole
happen.
State, once they become a –
maybe Canada
so,
will preempt them.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Or Mexico. I mean, it's already they're already past protectorate stage.
They're I don't think that's
See,
quite
this
how
is
it
politics.
Works.
This is it. This is the episode.
So,
oh man, cool.
Anyways,
all right,
driverless cars. So DC is being stupid. I mean, straight up dumb. The District of Columbia, they're the third district that's considering legalizing driverless cars and trying how to figure out how to regulate them. Nevada and California are like, cool, we want to be on the cutting edge of this. We want to help you guys out. We just want it to be safe and reasonable. That's like their whole big thing with California. So the District of Columbia, in all their infinite wisdom, their proposed law to regulate them would require a licensed person to be in the driver's seat while it's driving.
Okay.
That makes sense. If you take over the car, it's got to be somebody who can drive the car. That's cool. I get that. The car will also legally be required to use alternative fuels like electric or hybrid or something like that.
Okay.
So
trucks are out.
Yeah, so trucks are out, which at this point actually wouldn't affect Google that much because
they're doing
tend
it with Priuses, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm gonna say they're so Californian, it's not even funny. So they're going with like Prius and hybrid cars, but it basically wouldn't mean that anything outside of their fleet of cars couldn't be there. But this is the best part. This is the part I love. There will also be an additional 1.875 cent tax per mile for
awesome.
The cars. Yeah, so there's no driving tax for any car. Now, this isn't unprecedented.
But what's their rationale?
The rationale there is that there's going to be a lot of extra legal stuff that needs to happen, that, you know, like new regulations that they're currently doing and stuff, and this would help pay for it. But, yeah, sort of one of those, like, you got this, like, new budding technology, and you've got these states that are like gung-ho, we want to be on the forefront of this, because one of the big things is it's like your car is most efficient when you're cruise controlling, like your mileage goes way up because the car is tuned to drive itself at the best, you know, the best, at the best fuel efficiency. And so theoretically, these things could really improve the efficiency of a car just by virtue of them driving, not even including it be electric and hybrid. But no, these guys are, you know, we're going to make it more difficult on you. You've got to be electric and hybrid.
And my guess is they wanted to do that for a while, and this is, they're just stepping their foot into the water to see how it does, because they'd love to switch to it just in general. Because I'm sure, you know, they know with hybrids and stuff coming down the line, they missed that opportunity, and they're going to watch their revenues decline. And so by switching it over to a miles driven, you know, they're going to theoretically keep their revenue up, or maybe even increase it as people are willing to get farther away. I love this little throwaway line. Currently, automakers are mildly skeptical of the ability of driverless cars to appeal to consumers.
Yeah, that one's great, isn't it?
They're skeptical about how much consumers are going to love it. They're just like, is it just going to be like, love it like a 10 out of 10 on a scale? Or is it going to be like a 12 out of 15, or, you know, a 12 out of 10 on a scale? Is that what they're skeptical about? We just don't know if they're going to really, really like it, or just like absolutely beyond love it.
Yeah.
Because here's what I found. Here's what I found. Every single article that they have, and it's in this paragraph here. How do you say this person's name? Chen? C-H-E-H?
I think it's Shish.
What?
I don't know.
Okay, so this guy, I read this line in every single article that has to do with driverless cars. It says, I found it to be absolutely amazing. I didn't know we advanced so far. It says, I too found my May test ride impressive, and I'm thrilled of a technology that can greatly improve traffic safety, whatever, offer disabled people an unprecedented level of personal mobility, true, and fundamentally change the way we traverse. So I was like, that's the cool part. Traffic safety is important too, I guess. Just not like,
I was going to say, that was pretty flippant on the web traffic searches. Safety one.
I want to do web searches while driving. I want to text and talk while driving, which I guess is safety, right? Anyways, the point is, anybody and everybody who has gotten into one of these cars goes, oh my word, this is the future, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
How automakers are mildly skeptical?
Well, they're not. You know what it is? I'll be totally honest with you.
They're
mildly skeptical of electric car, of the Tesla's electric cars. They're mildly skeptical of Ford is mildly skeptical of Toyota's Prius because they didn't build one yet, or theirs doesn't sell as well. It's one of those things where they absolutely know that this is the future. And they're, I mean, or at least, you know, it's, this
and
is
price
one of those,
point's
going
to be huge. I mean, and I get that. And it's, and it should be a premium when it first comes out. No question in my mind.
Especially because from
but
a computational
it's only
perspective,
going to be for like 5 years.
I'm going to say, from a computational perspective, they require gigantic computer systems. But the thing is that, Google, every year they get smaller and better and better and cheaper. And, you know, and it's one of those things where, they're mildly skeptical of the fact of it's not, you know, they don't want to tell their investors, look, this is the future and we should be investing
well,
in it.
Here's
they don't want to invest in it first.
Well, here's the deal. They are still afraid that Google is going to like team up with Tesla or something and give them exclusive rights. They, for whatever reason, have not been following the whole Android thing and don't understand the fact that Google will let anybody and everybody use something that they created and tweak it to their own willing, you know, to what makes sense for them. They haven't figured out yet, for whatever reason, that Google does that.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, the second Google's like, hey, we think this is ready for prime time, we're ready to team up with GM, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, you know, anybody and everybody, all of a sudden, this is the future, guys.
You know?
They're like, this is amazing.
But up until that point,
they're going to be mildly skeptical.
Yeah, that's exactly, because it's the exact same thing as the, you know, BlackBerry and Microsoft being like, Apple's not going to come into the cell phone market and just design this, or, you know, Palm was the one, and we've been doing this for 10 years. Some computer company is not just going to come in here and take us over. It's the exact same thing, whereas years later you learn behind closed door, everybody freaked out. They freaked out so bad they lost their heads, and a lot of people lost their companies over what was
Yeah.
going on.
But they're gonna, but Google's gonna partner with them, and they'll, and it'll be awesome because Google will be like, "Oh, it's for free because we love you." And it, which they should not do. They should definitely charge auto manufacturers for this.
I have a feeling that they will charge for this. I
It's
have a
good.
feeling
I
that
think they
they'll.
learned their lesson from Android, I think.
Yeah.
And it'll
I
be
think
good.
they'll realize that this is such a capital expense, and it'll be such a premium service at first. And like you
I
said, it'll be
hope.
such a premium thing that I get the feeling that all they will want to price it aggressively so it gets out there as soon as possible and nobody else will challenge them. But it'll be kind of like Google Maps where to some degree they're going to charge, and you know they're not going to do it for free for
Well,
everybody,
and this
but
isn't an open source type of deal, especially when you've got safety involved, and you know they're gonna open themselves up to lawsuits and risk because people could die, literally
yeah.
from some sort of computational error. They're not gonna let people come in and just, you know, root it. Go, oh, yeah,
Right.
you know, or whatever that. I don't even know what that
Do-do-do-do,
means,
baby.
but
I don't even
yeah.
know what that means. Well, a couple weeks from now, I'll be able to get deep into that. But
So yeah, anyways, very cool. Driverless cars, kind of. I mean, they'll come around. Hey, they passed it, right? And it'll be once like say a semi truck comes out and they can do a self-driving semi, and you know, and it works, and other states are just eating it up. They'll change their law. You know, no big deal. So what? They'll be out a year. I don't think it's the end of the
Yeah.
world.
No, definitely. It's a place to start, like all
Yeah.
regulation. You know, it's like they used to say you had to like, you know, they were I was reading an article, they were talking about like some of the early regulations regarding cars in general. You know, those were and those all changed once it became, you know,
Yeah.
they're being overly cautious. I think they're being stupidly overly cautious, but I,
Well,
you
what
know,
you're seeing is
but
they want to switch to hybrids, and they want to do these miles traveled fees,
yeah.
and this is a way for them to do it. And they're like, "Hey, this is theoretically a new type of car. It's an opportunity for us to introduce this. They will let us because they want this so bad that we can get away with it."
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's I think that's what we're seeing, but I don't know.
Yeah. I agree.
It'll be interesting to see how other states follow suit too. If they go, "Oh, that's a great idea. Let's
I'll
jump
bet
on
they
the
go.
bandwagon."
I'll bet they go the California Nevada route. I mean, if California didn't think to tax it, let's be honest, nobody else is gonna tax
Oh, I don't know, man.
it.
I think California might be like, "Oh, missed
Yeah,
that one."
I was gonna say, we'll come back and tax it later.
Yeah,
Hey, wait a
definitely.
second, guys. I have a good idea. I revenue stream. Woo!
Totally. Makes sense. So, that's cool. All right. So something happened on Tuesday. I don't know if you're aware of it or not. I
Yeah,
mean, I
I
know that
love
you were
how
tweeting pretty, you know, ferociously there, but
there is not a single tech news article from Tuesday.
that's
It's just
because technology
blank.
companies are smart and they
Yeah.
know not to compete with Apple and not to compete with nation politics.
Yeah. Even Apple was smart enough to know that one.
Yeah.
You know?
So there was a winner, and I don't want to spoil anything, so you have to look it up on your own. But there were some cool things that were going on within each camp from a technology standpoint, and our goal is not to talk about politics, in the sense not to take sides or anything like that. But clearly there was a winner and there was a loser, and there were some things that were done very well and things that were done very bad.
Yeah.
Those also tend to align pretty closely with
You
the winner and loser.
know, it usually is when you do a sports recap, one team did everything well, one team did everything
Or at
poorly.
least more things.
Usually
Yeah,
one won and the
it's
other
not very
lost.
often that there's a team who goes, "Yeah, it's kind of weird. They had more yards, more completions. They played an overall better game, but they lost." It's not very often.
The Niners have done that a lot in the past couple of years, but
Hey, they managed to tie today. How about
I
that?
know, that is shocking.
Yeah. So there's two specific articles, one talking about the Obama campaign and one talking about the Romney campaign from a technology standpoint. And I'm not 100% sure how to tackle it, but we'll start, I guess we'll just talk about one and then I'll give you the contrast. So the Obama campaign apparently went like data crazy this time around, which actually sounds really cool.
Because
I'm a data guy, I'm into it. And apparently they were told, anonymous people talked about what went on, and they said the only not contingency, but you know, request, I guess. What's that? You know, I'll only talk if you do this, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Condition. Thank you. Was that they had to publish the article. They had to wait until after the elections to publish it. So this article was published on Wednesday. And you know, honestly, after reading it, you're like, yeah, I don't blame them. I'm actually shocked that people would talk about it, and I could see why they would do it anonymously, because this is huge. This is the equivalent of Moneyball in baseball. Have you seen that movie?
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You have to watch that movie. All right. It's, if you haven't seen that movie, you have to watch it, because that is the future of politics. What happened with Moneyball, the whole premise of it is, and the A's actually did it, and it's based on a real story where, the
Brad
A's
Pitt did it too.
What?
Brad Pitt did it too.
Yeah. And Brad Pitt, but basically what happens is traditionally owners and managers and stuff like that would look at ball players and be like, oh, he looks like a strapping young lad. Or, you know, they would use their gut and their intuition to evaluate players.
Yeah.
And in Moneyball, they said, no, that's dumb. Let's look at what are the things that help you win games. And then let's pick players that do those things well. So, for example, what they found was it wasn't necessarily about throwing a ton of strikeouts or, you know, even just hitting a ton of home runs. The number one consistency thing on, like, winning games was getting on bases. The team that got people on base more often won. Okay?
Yeah.
And so what they started doing was they started targeting players who could hit the ball and get on base. And they literally, in this example, and I don't know how much it was in real life, but at least in the movie, it was like they signed this one guy and they were like, you have to learn how to play first base. He's like, I'm a catcher. I don't play first base. They go, we don't care. We need to get you on the field because you can hit and get singles over and over and over again, and we need to find a spot for you, so you're going to play first base now. And so they taught him how to play first base. And that was because part of the problem was they lost one of their franchise players. And so because they're a smaller club, because, you know, they compete with the Giants and stuff like that.
And they live in Oakland.
Yeah. Rough life. They had to figure out a different way to be like, okay, well, now how do we can't afford to go get a big fish like this guy, because when they first brought him on, he wasn't, you know, he was cheap. And then they couldn't afford to keep him because he turned out to be good. And so what they ultimately did was they recruited this bunch of misfit players who were...
Oh, that's the Giants catchphrase. Don't do that.
Oh, sorry. Well,
they're the misfits.
The movie. I'm just telling you what happened in the movie. Okay, so in the movie, they bring these players who... they're misfits in the sense that they're cheap because they couldn't afford much. But for the level that they were requesting in terms of pay, they got on base the most out of everybody. Okay.
Nice.
As a result, I don't remember the exact number, but they ended up beating the number of wins in a row.
Oh, wow.
Pretty interesting. And, you know, so they built the emotion thing of that. But the whole point of it was, and they get to the end where the owner of the A's, he gets invited to, you know, one of the bigger parks, right? And it's just like huge and tons of money. And he's talking to that owner who wants to offer him a job, basically, which he turns down and stick with the A's to, you know, because that's his home team. But the owner's like, he goes, you don't know it yet, because they didn't win the World Series, but they went to the playoffs and did well.
Yeah.
And he's like, why do you want me? He goes, we didn't win. He goes, no, you know, you don't understand. He goes, you just changed the game of baseball forever. He goes, you proved a model, something that no one thought could work, a different way of looking at the game, and you were successful beyond any wild imagination, given what your budget is. He goes, we're going to do that. We are now hiring people to do what you guys did. And he goes, and we're not throwing thousands of dollars at it. We're going to throw millions of dollars at this.
Yeah.
And he goes, this is the way that we're going to play. This is the way that we're going to recruit. This is the way that we're going to decide who plays from now on. He goes, you have fundamentally changed the game of baseball forever. And it was all because of some algorithm that they had done some data mining to see what are the consistent traits that, you know, come to a win, and then we'll recruit specifically for that. Okay. So that's, I mean, awesome movie, even though I just pretty much told you everything about it. It's still worth watching.
I'm a Secret Ace fan, because right now the Giants are, you know, top dogs, so you gotta be a Secret Ace fan.
Yeah.
Ace started to do well, and I started to get all, like, I was like, I took my old Ace stuff out of my closet. Like, it's time, and then they lost, so I was time. Like, oh, I was just kidding.
Time.
I'm not an Ace fan. I'm totally a Giants fan.
No way. So I'm wearing my orange, so there you go. See, I'm...
Exactly. But but that being so, what was I gonna say?
It's worth watching the movie.
There we go. I never wanted to watch the movie, and now I do want to watch it. But there was a greater point to this, and I want to hear it.
Yes. The Obama campaign did what the A's did for baseball.
Yeah.
Okay. Where they sat there and said, there is this thing called political instinct and, you know, things like that. And they went, but we are not going to do that. We are going to do things that are highly targeted based off of data. And they literally had a back room of number crunchers, of data scientists that were removed from the main Chicago office branch because it was a secret thing that they were running tests all the time. And then just feeding the information to the manager and Obama so that they knew what to do, okay? And so, like, here was an example. They were doing some fundraising stuff, okay? And what they found via, I don't know exactly how they collected the data because I didn't tell you all of that. But basically what they found was that on the West Coast, females ages 40 to 49 really liked George Clooney.
Oh, really?
Like, okay. So what they did, and, you know, like I said, it was from doing polls and, you know, stuff like that. So what they did was they also knew that women were far and away the single demographic group that was most likely to hand over cash for a campaign. So what they did was they had ladies pay or, you know, buy a ticket to dine with Obama and George Clooney, and they raised a buttload of money doing that.
I'm not saying I'm a lady or anything, but I probably would do that.
That would be cool. Well, and then so what they so but then what they did was they said, okay, that was awesome, that was really cool, let's now do this for the East Coast. And so they ran surveys and tests like that, ran data, and found that the person on the West Coast was Sarah Jessica, or on the East Coast was Sarah Jessica Parker. And so they did the exact same thing on the East Coast, again, to massive success. And they said that when they first got started, they wanted it, like, someone had said, we should try to raise $1 billion. And people were just like, nope, never going to happen. There's absolutely no way that we could do it. But by doing those types of data-driven metrics, they were able to highly and efficiently target people who had... who was the willingness and the ability to pay, and got them to do it. And he easily raised $1 billion.
It's so funny. Cause I mean, you contrast to that, to Romney's campaign where he had Meatloaf, you know, like singing for him in the last, you know, which horribly singing for him in the last couple of days, you know, contrasting that to the Sunday or Monday night concert with Bruce Springsteen. There's a G there, right? I can't say his name.
Bruce
Springsteen. And Jay-Z. Yeah, Sting, thank you. Jay-Z, which are like, it's an interesting, you know, for a concert, you wouldn't put those two together necessarily, but you could see how definitely a bunch of number crunchers would say, you know who would be really great to, like, energize the bass at the last minute? Jay-Z and Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. Well, and their whole thing was like, we're not going to do that. What they said was they analyzed at the, like, what their big problem was at the very beginning was that it had databases everywhere, all over the place. And so what they did was they brought them all together to a centralized, what they call, mega file. And so what they did now is then they shared that out with all the different field offices. And they would say, like, for example, because they had this certain type of thing, they wouldn't they didn't just tell you, here's who you need to call. They would also tell them, and here's the kind of appeals that will persuade them to vote and give.
And, well, it's funny.
And so, yeah, so they literally said, we didn't just give them names and numbers. They also ranked them in order of their persuadability and, you know, along with their campaign's most important priorities first. And they had and they just had a ton of different factors that led into, you know, how persuadable someone would be. And they were, like, regular things like age, sex, and race, neighborhood, voting records, stuff like that. But then they also pulled in their consumer data.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the stuff that I heard about early on, but it's like, they broke it down by soda, and they could tell you within like a 10% confidence interval who you were going to vote for based on which drink, which soda you preference.
Well, and they knew, like,
form of
if you were, well, yeah, but they also knew, like, if you were going to give online, that they should send you emails and contact you online. They knew if you would be mostly persuaded by mail, or they also knew, like, who would be the best volunteers to talk to these people. And so, and what they were saying is that they had done some of that in the 2008 campaign, and they literally just, like, they didn't even double down. They just, like, tripled down on this one. And then they did some other stuff when it came to actual turnout. They were able to, once again, micro-target down to individuals and be like, you need to vote, and we think we know which way you will vote, and so we're going to literally put you on a bus and get you to vote.
I mean, Wednesday morning, the news was out. Romney got beat by the ground game. It, you know, to bring it back to the baseball analogy, Romney and Obama were pretty good. They were equally matched with their pitching and their batting, but Obama had him beat with a catcher. You know, and it was like,
well, and when you look at the way that it turned out, where from a popular vote standpoint, it was relatively close.
Right.
And it was something like it was a closer vote than it was between Obama and the other old white guy before him. McCain. But Romney got less votes than McCain. So they were saying that essentially Obama got less votes as well, and actually he got more less votes than, you know what I mean? So they were like, it was closer race, and Obama didn't actually get as many votes.
Yeah.
Neither did Romney, obviously. So, you know, there it is. But the point is that it was close. But when it came to the Electoral College, it wasn't even kind of close.
Right.
They knew exactly. They went, here's where we need to target. They just had a better game plan overall executed it unbelievably well.
The Obama campaign managed to sideline Florida, which is like 40 electoral votes. It's unbelievable that I couldn't Wednesday morning waking up. Cause I mean, like, the fact that, you know, okay, Romney conceded, which means that he thinks about me. I assumed once he conceded that meant that he thought Florida wasn't going to go his way. I didn't realize that, like, until Wednesday morning, it was like, whoa, Florida doesn't matter. And in the end, Obama won Florida. By a tiny narrow margin, but enough to, you know, I mean, yeah, he just, Obama crushed him from an electoral vote standpoint.
Yeah.
And since that's how we elect people, you know, and it's funny, I do appreciate the people pointing out for the last, you know, the week leading up, one of the reasons I listen to the show that I listen to is because they repeatedly point out that national polls are stupid. That's like saying, like, that's like judging a baseball's victory by, like, which team brushes their teeth more. That's not how we judge these things. They win based on electoral votes. So why do we even talk about it? But it's interesting when you point that out, that it's like, it was actually a smaller group of people that voted, but it was so highly targeted that you were able to go into specific counties and say, this is what we need to do to win this county so we can win this state. And, you know, whereas the Romneys, like, you know, it was clearly just a much more traditional campaign.
Oh, totally.
And the other big difference is, and, you know, and this this goes right down to just the political, the sport of politics, is, you know, the Romney, the entire, they had to campaign for a year and a half against, you know, eight other Republicans, at least half of which never actually intended to run for president, just wanted to sell their book, and he had to pay and campaign against them, whereas Obama's been doing this, everything you're talking about, they've been doing and preparing for the last 2 years. So it's like, well Ronnie was beating the Republicans.
I think that they've I think at the end it's going to, the Democrats are going to have a system and the Republicans are going to have a system, and whoever wins the nomination is just going to plug into that system. So,
yeah.
I think that doesn't matter anymore.
You
know, and they just recognized it. And it was evident in 2008 that they understood it better than McCain did. You know, everyone focused on the social media aspect of the Obama campaign back in 2008. And they were like, oh, Obama's better on Facebook and Twitter than McCain is. McCain doesn't even know what Twitter is. You know, he's still trying to figure out Google. And, that's how it felt. And I think in the end it was like, no, that was a red herring. That was a symptom of something much bigger going on.
Yeah.
And which was, they got people in who were a little bit savvy about these things called the computer, and they can do numbers. And it was like someone watched Moneyball, and on the campaign team, and went, "This is amazing."
Ironically, it was the techno corporate influence where they sat down and said, "Look, if we look at the numbers, we can turn enormous profits." Where it was that attitude and those tools that are had them say, "Look, if we look at the numbers, we can turn elections." And it makes me want to live in a swing state even more, because
you get all this
attention. I want to matter.
So I love this final paragraph here, because it encapsulates exactly what we've been saying. It says, the data-driven decision-making played a huge role in creating a second term for the 44th president and will be one of the more closely studied elements in the 2012 cycle. It's another sign that the role of the campaign pros in Washington, who make decisions on hunches and experience, is rapidly dwindling, being replaced by the work of quants and computer coders who can crack massive data sets for insight. As one official put it, the time of, quote, guys sitting in a back room smoking cigars saying, "We always buy 60 minutes, unquote, is over. In politics, the era of big data has arrived. And I totally 100% agree with that. And, it's interesting, because it will get to the point where I feel like the day that we vote will just be get it over with. You know, it's going to be the final 2 minutes of a game. We're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just almost borderline irrelevant, unless it is genuinely a true race, right? Or a true close race. But I think for the most part, it's kind of like, no, it's done. We all know exactly what's going to happen here. Now it's just a matter of counting.
Well, and that doesn't even include the pollsters, which, you know, Nate Silver is the dude. He works for Time, or writes for Time, and he was the guy who nailed 49 of the states last time around, 50 states, how they were all going to go. And I've read about, like, the basics of, like, how they do this sort of thing is they take these last minute polls, like, on Monday and see how it's going to go, and they go county by county, and they get really, really targeted data similar to what we're talking about, and then they start taking exit polling data as they come out, and they know, based on, you know, demographics of what they're getting during the exit poll and everything, they're able to adjust all those numbers and get good confidence intervals, and when they add those two things together using sophisticated statistical tools, they're able to, you know, and between the fact that there's just rapid reporting of all of that data and, you know, really powerful ways to actually study it, by like noon they're within they know who won, because races have gone within, they can look county by county and have figured out which way it's going to go above the margin of error. So it's like, we're not perfectly sure what the number will be, but we know that it is outside of the margin of error by this point of what it was yesterday. And so we can say which ways these are going to go. And the ones that aren't are so insignificant that we can already kind of predict within by noon what way the election has gone, which just blows my mind.
Which, and I mean, like, so it's so, and the real battle is not election day, really. It's raising funds is a huge one. And then it's eventually they'll even get more sophisticated where it'll be, you know, the message in different places to different people is going to be even more highly targeted because they'll know what will persuade them and what won't. You know, they're going to know that finance is a hot button for me, and that's what they'll talk about with me. They're, you know, they're going to ignore some of the other issues because there's like, you know, it's not going to, that will not persuade me. Which is going to be interesting.
I'm glad we're taking the policies out of politics. That's why I'm glad to hear.
You know, and in a lot of ways, that's what they're going to do.
I mean, you know, why would you? It's and I mean, you know, and I don't mean to get too cynical, but the presidential elections are by and large, you know, popularity contests to see who's, you know, they're domestic popularity contests asking who's going to be the best international representative of the nation. It's one of the dumbest contests in the world.
I still maintain it's whoever is the best speaker wins. That's my way long ago. That was easy. The second Romney had the nomination, I was like, okay, I can already tell you who's going to win because I know who the better speaker is.
Right. Well, have you ever seen that there's some
so they do all polls. Sorts of
yeah. They
hire me, guys. Pay
you're
us.
Like you're not big data at all. You're for the seat of my pants. Well, but they,
you know
they,
what?
They,
all it takes though is that one seed of an insight. That's all that's needed. And that makes all the difference.
That's true.
They had to know that the insight was it's about runs, not about other things. You know, it's about getting on base. It's not about runs. Yeah. It's not about strikeouts. It's about getting on base. That's the seed of the insight. So for me, okay, so parties, when you're finding someone to nominate, just pick the best speaker. Who cares what his policies are? It doesn't matter. He's just got to be a good speaker. Because chances are he wouldn't even be in your decision set if he didn't have reasonable policies.
It's true.
Boom.
That's true. Well,
and there's your 2012. There's your 2016.
And let's be honest, right, if you don't agree with his policies, just buy him off. He'll go with you.
Yeah. Totally. So anyway, so that was the good. All right.
That was the good.
So good job, Obama team. I from a data perspective, awesome. I love it. We're gonna see more of it. You're right that from an ideological standpoint, I've always felt like it's too much of a competition anyways, opposed to let's put the best policies forward and, you know, let America.
My team
that's
won.
Way
My
too
team
altruistic.
Lost.
Yeah, that's way too altruistic. Which is why we just need to go to dictators and I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. But you know what? Benevolent dictators, if you could do that, and I think Singapore is a great example, it could do really, really well. Just saying.
A good dictator? Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's yes. I don't think anybody's it's that classic Churchill. It's that classic Churchill quote of democracy is the worst form of government except all others.
Yeah. Okay, there are a couple examples, I suppose, of not great dictators. See, the problem is if it's a good dictator, you'll never notice because it will just work and just be good. If it's a bad dictator, yeah, they tend to mess with things, and, you know, it's horrible. So if, you know, it's one of those, okay, if I have a risk, which one do I want to avoid? It's, I want to avoid the bad dictator as opposed to the good that can come from a good dictator.
Yeah.
But anyways, so let's go to the flip side. You see, because the Romney campaign, it wasn't 100% old school buggy whip style. They, too, had a digital... I don't even know if I want to call it a strategy. System?
You can call it a strategy.
Play, I guess. They had something called Orca.
Oh, yeah.
Which does not stand for anything other than that's the name they decided to give it, which everyone keeps asking, what's it stand for? Like, nothing. Like, way to have a story around that. And see, their problem, the Obama administration, they are probably upset that people talked about what it was that they were doing because they realized that it's going to up the game, right? And they knew that they had something special, and so, like, we're not going to talk about it. The Romney campaign decided to crow a little early about how awesome they were. Telling everyone, this is our secret sauce and this is how we're going to win the campaign.
So they
created a web app, from what I can gather, that apparently it let volunteers search for and mark off voters as they left the polling location, and then collected the data to use in projections or check which Romney supporters might need a call. So basically, they created a web app that was supposed to replace the exit polls. It will give them faster real-time data that is more accurate, so that they can, you know, if they realize they're losing or something, I don't know, they can go round up people because their web app told them, hey, you haven't voted yet or something.
Right.
I'm honestly a little fuzzy on how it worked. But at the end of the day, from what it sounds like, they didn't really stress test this web app before it started. So it kept crashing over and over again. And in a few cases, actually gave like false information, you know, like
awesome
phone numbers that weren't real, that kind of thing. Really making it effective to call people.
You love it when your database corrupts in the middle of your really important, it needs to work right now.
Yeah, I love this quote here. It says, Orca is lying on the beach with a harpoon in it. it's a cool idea. As like we talked about just a couple seconds ago, it's honestly over by election day. To have put all this time and effort into an app on election day was a waste of time and resources. Even if it worked perfectly.
Right.
So it was like, not only were they focusing in the wrong area and like on a cool web app, but it just totally and utterly broke. They were saying, oh, here was another one. Some of the volunteers, their passwords, usernames didn't work. They couldn't even log in. I mean, it was just, it was bad. They messed up. They were having all their volunteers use it, right? And so they were kind of, you know, they couldn't just keep it a secret. But they could have just had their volunteers use it and not really talk to the press about it until after the fact. Because there's a nice little video on here where, I don't know who it is, someone important in the campaign, I'm sure, you know, is talking about just how awesome it's going to be and, you know, how it's just really going to give them a leg up. And they were talking about how, like, they even made fun of the Obama campaign in there. You know, oh, they don't have anything like this. You know, this is going to blow their socks off. And, well, actually they do, and you will learn about it the day after. And it's better than yours. But anyways, it's hard to not get too political when you're talking about politics, especially like this. But there was technology involved, and I think Romney campaign showed how not to do it, and I think the Obama campaign showed how to do it, and it is, and I, depending on the level of investment, I think it's forever changed, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, and what's fun about this is that it's, you know, when it comes to domestic policy, I don't actually like talking about domestic policy that much. Because most people think I'm a nutcase. probably fair enough. But I really talking about the strategy of politics, because that's fascinating to me, and that's outside of policy. And it's like, you know, and what we're saying here is that this definitely came down to, you know, our nation is pretty evenly divided from a policy perspective. And, you know, statistic after statistic shows, if anything, it leans a little bit right. You know, a little bit on the Republican. Yeah, it's we're a center right nation when it comes to political leanings. Well, yeah, I know. We just current elections don't show that.
Tend to vote.
That's one of the big things that's changed in the last 2 years, is that young people went out and voted for the first time.
Okay, we're trending way too close to politics. I just want you to know that. You can finish your thought, but I'm just letting you know that we're getting...
Okay, that's a good point. Well, I mean, this is what's so great about the big data thing, is that you're sitting here saying these things are no longer like these things aren't what policies do you agree with, where should we go, what's going on with America, where should we be going. This is just stating, this is what the numbers show us, is that we're center right, and that, you know, and usually, and unfortunately, usually people who declare themselves as unaffiliated, I'm not right or left, aren't included in the statistics.
Right.
So really and truly what they end up looking at is, they say people who describe themselves as conservative outnumber the people who describe themselves as liberal. But the truth is that that middle area of the independents, I'm not really conservative or liberal, they almost always tend liberal. So if you were to clump them in with the liberals, now it starts to, it's a little bit, we're a little bit center left, and it, but that group is the group that they're targeting with these like crazy precision,
yeah,
you know,
they're doing a great job of it.
Systems. Yeah, exactly. And so they're, and, you know, so even though the Republicans, or I should say the conservative base, a conservative politician has a better base than a more, you know, engaged, solid base than the liberal candidate, that open area of where you can actually play, that's definitely in it, it tends towards the liberal candidate already.
So you're saying, so if you're saying, if that, if the Republicans can figure out how this thing called the internets and computers and Excel work, they actually stand a chance of winning.
If they can stop being a bunch of old white men when it comes to technology, yes, yes they can. That's, that is the, that is the you know, the, well, you know, and
yeah, we'll see
and,
how that goes.
I was going to say, you know, and it's funny, if you listen to the political media over the last week, basically the long and short of winning as a Republican from now on comes down to, you know, just stop being old white men, which I don't know if that's really fair one way or another, but I, you know, but what bothers me about it all, I guess what bothers me about it all, and or maybe I should get excited about this, I don't know. I don't know how I feel, is the fact that the policies of it all have gone way to the side. It's all about demographics. It's all about, you know, how you target. It's all
about the policies are matter, but when it comes to winning, you know, it's kind of like once you decide your policies, decide what it's at, and then it just becomes about winning, which is weird because it means that the voters aren't necessarily voting on policy anymore. Which is the weird part. I don't know. You're right. It depends on how, depends on the mood you're in. You could like it or hate it. But well, what I love, and I think over time it will get sorted out, maybe, or we'll just, you know, go the Romans way.
let's be honest. That's probably the case.
Yeah. I just like the fact that technology is playing a more central role in all the stuff that's going on. They are getting away, and you know, honestly, I'd love to see them do this for you know, like once you're elected, okay, cool, don't stop. You know, oh, we're thinking about passing this law. Let's actually poll people, and you know, use some real data science techniques to figure out what people really want, and then let's pass that law so that we're, you know, doing the representative work of the people. But I know, crazy idea.
As somebody who represents what might be considered a fringe political element, I'm not a big fan of democracies. I don't that you want to. Let's
just
want to
be clear here.
Idea.
Matthew doesn't represent me or the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast.
I only call it a fringe because unfortunately we only won like 2% of the vote on Tuesday, and that really bothers me. I was hoping it would be somewhere in the ballpark of 5%, and
bummer,
maybe gain a little bit of speed. But when you realize you're like, there's 300 million people, which means you're talking 30. So there's only, well, you know, optimistically, there's 60 million of us out there, more or less. But, you know, realistically, probably not even that many. So I'm a little bit bitter about the whole thing.
So on that note.
Okay, thank you.
Interesting. This concludes the politics of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast.
Yes.
You also did the DC Comics story. I saw that.
Yeah, but I did it on the wrong day.
There really is no news this week, since there are literally two stories that we copied each other on. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's funny. So, you did something crazy this week, didn't you?
I did something crazy. I've been talking about doing this for a long time.
An hour in, and the real good part of the show starts.
I know. This is where it gets fun.
Thank you for holding on.
Yeah. We're going to have to put a warning into this show. So, on Friday, I went in, and I bought, or signed up.
What have we here?
I got a 2-year contract with a data plan, and since I haven't gotten a phone through the phone company since my very first one 4 years ago, I qualified for an upgrade.
Whoa!
Yeah, so I decided, and with a little bit of counsel from my co-host, I decided to do something a little bit fun, which is I decided to buy a Lumia 920.
Oh man!
And
say that again, just for the fun of it.
A Leukemia 920.
Leukemia.
That's just what I've been calling.
So what do you have in your hands right there?
So this is a Lumia 920. This is the newest and latest Windows 8 phone. So for those of you that, like, I thought he was like a Mac fanboy that James always threatened him turning into a Google fanboy, never fear.
He's a sleeper Microsoft fanboy.
I know. I will be picking up a Google Samsung Galaxy S in a couple of weeks, and then probably an iPhone 5 after that. I want to give them a full test ride, and this is the perfect time because there's a small and annoying restocking fee, but outside of that, it doesn't cost me anything to jump from phone to phone to phone and do it as many times as I want. So I decided I'd go with the flagship phone of each operating system.
Of each successful operating system.
I'm going to say, you got left out. And we talked about you
Take
guys.
Take note.
And you got left out. I'm just saying.
Hey, you know what? Also, if their BlackBerry 10 was available, you would have done it.
I probably wouldn't have done it.
Oh.
I might have done it.
I
don't know. It depends.
I would have talked
to you
about it.
Yeah, you're right. If it had just launched, I feel like a month after it launched, it would have already been too late. but okay, anyways. So I have been using the Nokia.
And does that have Windows Phone 7 or 8?
Windows Phone 8, which is a big distinction.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah. And so this is...
Man, I wish I lived near you. That would be awesome.
I know.
To
so each week will be, if you watch the video, I'm flicking and scrolling and doing stuff with it. It's pretty cool.
Wow,
amazing. So each week I'll be given a little bit more of an... I know. I'll be given
so
a little
metro
bit more
of you.
Oh, man. Each week I'll be given a little bit of an update. I'll start with my initial reactions to the phone.
Okay.
And then a week later I'll give you the, like, my...
Because you can hold on to it for 14 days, right?
14 days. So... Okay. So this is my initial reaction.
Make it 12
to be
safe.
Yeah, that's my plan. What the heck is that? I've got bacon on my screen.
Like,
it's got
like
well,
a
it's,
real piece
it's
of
got,
bacon, or
no, it's got like a little symbol. It's so funny. I held it up. You can't see it. It's right. It doesn't matter. Anyways, I don't know what it means.
You have a piece of bacon on your screen. All right, cool.
So.
Initial
so this
reaction.
Is what I'm gonna say. My initial reaction is.
So tell me about I want to know about the hardware, the software, all that stuff. So go.
Okay. Initial reaction. This is everything that the iPhone software should look like. This is what iOS should look like.
Wow.
This is everything iOS shouldn't function as, though.
Okay.
Okay, first off, and it's funny, I've been helping a friend of mine develop his website, and I've been building it for him, and when we, you know, he was very much a fan of, like, the Apple gradients and blacks and, you know, and like, bulges and shadows and stuff, whereas when I showed him my my websites, the things that I'm clearly a big fan of are solid colors, lots of open space, you know, no actual borders or boundary regions, but imaginary boundary regions, and really extensive use of font color and size in order to delimitate between sections and stuff. I'm really into the minimalist design, and oh my gosh, this thing looks awesome from that, like, utilitarian minimalist thing.
It's almost as if Microsoft knows Edward Tufte.
It's almost as though that. So the live tiles are pretty cool. I mean, There's not a big difference between the live tiles and your like what are those your app icon buttons. There's from a usefulness perspective, they're basically the same, and the live tiles look pretty cool.
So like, what's an example? Like a weather tile would tell you here's how cold it is outside.
No, pretty much the weather tile just like says it's got the Weather Channel on it, and then you click on it and it goes into the app. Like it doesn't. Oh. Well, maybe
so that one, oh, like the one that makes sense to be live, isn't.
Yeah. Wait a second. I haven't actually turned it on yet. I live in California, dude. I never need the weather. So I'll turn it on right now, and we'll see what.
So what's another example of a live tile? Like if you get a new email message, it'll tell you.
New email.
It basically has a little. So just like your iPhone, it has a little indicator that says how many emails you have. Same with text messages. Your photos app, it cycles through photos, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
Looks nice. I have like a little me thing, which is stuff about me, updates and whatnot.
Oh,
it's kind of an update
Nintendo.
Center.
Okay.
Yeah. No. It's just basically my thing. Which is pretty cool. It's nice. It looks well, but the text, oh man, it's just beautiful.
Sync your contacts? Can you sync your contacts and stuff with?
So, this is a check that out. Check out what that looks like. Look at all that good use of space right there.
Yeah. Okay.
No hard lines.
How big is that screen, by the way?
It's huge. It's like 4.5 inches diagonally. That's pretty nice.
Huge, but okay.
I can see pixels though. it's actually got a really good high resolution screen. So emails, calendars, and contact information. I am not a good person to tell you how easy that is to sync that information.
Okay.
Because let me tell you why. Because 2 or 3 years ago, I decided that I'd go all in with Google, and all of my contact information is saved through Google Contacts on my email address. I got my email and my calendars synced across all the platforms, and they have this great useful internet interface called m.google.com. It is the server name. If you give that server name, your name, your email address,
it's like an Exchange
password,
account. Yep.
It treats it as an Exchange server. It syncs perfectly, automatically populates all of my contacts. It syncs it.
Wait, why are you not a good person to ask about that?
Oh, because nobody else does that. So I don't really know.
I do that.
Well, yeah, but that's because we're that kind of people. I recommend everybody does. But they were like, it's so funny because they were like, do you want me to sync your contacts from your iPhone to your new phone? I was like, not really. And they're like, so you're just going to put it in manually? No. And I'm sitting here thinking, you guys are going to jump. You're going to use my SIM card. You're going to jump it from one phone to the other phone, and you're going to put it into the server, into the memory, and it's not going to sync across all my platforms. Like, that's terrible. I don't want that. I want it to automatically update everywhere and propagate no matter what device I'm using.
Since you're going to be switching a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So I was really pleased by how easily that went. I mean, it was super easy, super straightforward. Really nice to set that up. I immediately bought or downloaded my Twitter because I like to tweet because it pushes it to Facebook. I downloaded Facebook a little bit later, Netflix, which I don't use because I don't have unlimited data. Fandango, which is cool. Dude, I love having a data plan, by the way. We're going to have to keep our eye on how much data I am using because...
Well, right now you're on Wi-Fi, right? So
right now, but, dude, I'm okay. An internet. I just... Yeah.
You don't have Wi-Fi at work, huh?
I do have Wi-Fi at work, but you'd be surprised. That's all I'm saying. Okay. So the second app that I got actually was a Kindle app because, as we all know, I've got my Kindle Fire, but I don't always have it with me. And if I'm in the mood to read, it'd
Kindle
be cool
Paperlight.
To have it. Thank you. It'd be cool to have the app running on the phone. So I download the app and it starts crashing right away. It doesn't work. So I do some research. Yeah, that app doesn't work.
Come on, Amazon or
Yeah, which that's
Microsoft.
Amazon's fault, but you're like, well, okay, but you know, that's rough. Okay, that'll change over time.
Yep.
Yeah, so I got the Facebook for Windows Phone. Navigating this is a pain in the butt. If I go to my news feed, so they've got this little, so there's three touch buttons on the bottom. There's a search button, the Windows button, which is basically a start button, brings you back to the home screen, and then a back button, which is pretty cool. Well, the
It's just
Facebook
like
app
Android, isn't it?
The Facebook app uses that back button. So, like, let's say I'm at my news feed, I go to my profile. Okay, cool. I'm looking at my profile. I hit the back button and it brings me back to the main page. This is the trick, though. If I hit the Windows page while on my profile and then navigate back to Facebook, so I'm on my profile page. I'm one page back, one page into the Facebook app. I go back to the home screen, then I go back to Facebook. Now when I hit the back button, it takes me back to the home screen instead of back to my
Brilliant.
news feed. So there's no way to get back to your news feed. You have to restart the app.
Wow. That's
Little
tricky.
things like that. That's all right. I haven't figured out how to
There's no
go.
swiping
So
to just go back and forth, huh? Doesn't work that
you'd
way.
think.
Okay.
Well, you swipe from page to page, so you like swipe from your photos and all sorts of. So that's a gesture that's already taken. That's
Oh.
all right. Internet Explorer.
Oh, your favorite. I've been looking forward to
I'm
this one.
gonna. Yeah. So we'll talk about this first. So okay, you go into it. You got the little back button. I like that. Except it's got the same exact problem. If you want to surf back and forth, no, that back button's already taken for bringing you back to the home screen. So once you, if you leave that web page, you're done. You can't
Interesting.
renavigate through it, and there's no forward button. So if you hit the back button twice, you can't just forward to the button that you to the page that you wanted to.
Okay,
Which is
not as crucial,
insane.
but all right.
Well, you'd
That whole
think it's
back
not as
button thing is
crucial.
a little weird.
Yeah, it's a pretty terrible little
Well, how does
little
Android handle that? Because I know they got the same back button thing.
I don't know, man. I'm gonna have to tell you in a
You
couple
will tell me
weeks.
in a couple weeks. Cool.
So you know how when you're like on your iPhone and you're texting and like sometimes you get mid-text and then you go back to the home screen to look something up, you copy
Yeah,
it from your home
totally.
screen and go back to the text and you finish your message? Yeah. The texting app doesn't hold on to partially completed texts.
Ooh, so you gotta copy
And
it.
well, yeah,
Unless
before
you
you
were
leave
copying
the app.
something else, and then you're in trouble.
Right. And before you leave the app, and you know, the iPhone's almost stupid about it. I've gone to people that I haven't texted in 6 months and there's a half-finished text. You know, but with Windows, nope, it just, you know, you're just like it gets rid of it, which I sit here and I go, okay, so my first impression is this. There are quite a few little glitches. It's a pretty frustrating launch,
Okay.
from a apps that don't work, and a lot of them have little glitches, but those are things they'll fix.
Totally.
And it would be unfair for me to give Apple a solid go despite their hiccups
Microsoft
with,
or wait, what do you
you know,
mean?
Apple, like with my iPod Touch. Like I got over the, well, I haven't really gotten over it, but I've gotten around the fact that my podcasting app doesn't work. It
Yes.
frustrates me, but I've
You've moved
moved on.
on.
Okay.
That's funny.
Well, I can do that to some degree with Windows Phone 8. But it's pretty, there's a lot of my thought is going to be is I wouldn't go out and buy one right now. I would wait 6 months.
Ooh, yeah. Well, and even then, that's a momentum killer. I mean, that's the
Yeah,
Zune, right? The
exactly.
Zune 2 was awesome, apparently. But by
Yeah.
then, it had already been kind of set, and no one
Right.
was willing to risk it. So that's interesting. So what do you like about the phone?
It looks beautiful, dude. It
Okay.
just their use of space, their use of gestures and how the whole thing animates, it looks fantastic. And it's the sort of thing that I don't know what Johnny Ives is going to do because this is what I want it to look like in iOS. And I don't legally think they can do that. But it's like when I imagined what Johnny, yeah, this is exactly what I should say, is when I imagined what Johnny Ives is going to do with iOS, what Microsoft did with this is what I was imagining. It
looks
fantastic. And I think when people say, I've heard people say for a long time, man, it looks fantastic. And I didn't understand what they meant by that. I was like, it's got great potential as a platform. It's got, you know.
No, they're literally talking about the looks.
Yeah, no, they're literally talking about it looks, it how it presents information is very visually pleasing. And it is. But from a usefulness standpoint, obviously, you know, honestly, I find that I don't use a ton of apps, and they got most everything I use. They don't have Pandora, which is a major miss for me, but they'll have that eventually. Mm-hmm. And then, oh my gosh. And then there's Chrome. There's Internet Explorer. And
were you just talking about that, or?
Well, I was talking about the navigation in Internet Explorer. Actually, how Internet Explorer operates is atrocious. It's still horrible. Every website I go to is broken.
Wow. That shouldn't be the case. I thought it was like standards compliant and, you know, all up to date. IE10's amazing now.
I don't know where people are getting that off. I mean, I regularly go to websites that break on Internet Explorer that render perfectly on every other phone, every other browser, every other computer. I just don't understand at all what is going on with them. And they're still functional. It's all style sheet stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, the buttons work. But you're sitting there going, half the reason why I go to these websites is because it's easy to read the information. Not, you know, it's like they take white text and it's on a white background all of a sudden. And all you're seeing is like gave it like a little shadow. Oh, it's terrible. It's so bad. It's so bad. The one thing I can say is, I sat down the first day and started typing out long responses on Reddit. Somebody was asking questions about ice and how ice freezes, and as in mechanical engineer, I'm sort of an expert. but I was doing these long in-depth explanations, and I felt very easy to type, which cool. I credit part to the screen and part to the keyboard. I read a couple reviews online just to see if I was on base, and everybody complains about the keyboard, and I shrugged my shoulders and said, I think it's great. It is as good, if not better, than the iPhone. One of the things that they do is it's like if you want to type in the middle of a text, you type where you want to type, and then what are those called? Shoot, I don't remember what it's called. You know how
magnifying glass? What?
No, when you're typing in Word, it's not an arrow, but it's that little I beam thing. You know,
hyphen
is no, like
I don't know it, what you're
instead
talking
of
about.
Your cursor, when your cursor goes around the screen on Word, it's that little I. Well, that pops up, and then you drag that where you want it to go, and it's actually, I think it's easier to navigate with that than with the magnifying glass.
Interesting.
Because what happens is because you pull your finger down, and now your finger is offset, so you actually see the words.
That's
whereas
nice.
The magnifying glass projects it to another area of the screen. They work fine. They both do essentially the same thing. But I thought Microsoft's integration of use of it was pretty nice. I mean, it, and like I said, the keyboard, it works really well. It's really responsive.
What about doing emails? Did you find that system?
Yeah.
The inbox and all that fun
stuff?
Oh,
yeah. It works really well. I mean, I don't
it's hard to mess up email at this stage of the game.
It really is. But it, you know, it's got all the basics. It's got a ton of the shortcuts. One of the things I really like about it, actually, is they put a little camera button on the side of the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got the phone open, you're like, oh shoot, I want to take that picture. You just hit that button, flips to the camera app, turns on super quick. Hit that button
again
and snaps
a picture.
And so it actually feels like a really big phone in your hand,
and the quality of the pictures pretty good,
really high, really good quality pictures.
And it does video too, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
How do you export it to your computer?
I have one of their SkyDrives, so it automatically loads everything in the SkyDrive.
Nice. Even
you
video.
Cool. And you can plug it. You can just plug it into your computer though, and drag it from folders. Oh, that's the other beautiful thing. So I before the show, I decided to plug it in, see how that works. Their little app for their Windows-based app crashes when trying to load music. So I can't get music on it, which is pretty frustrating. And how it like, you can't sort by albums. It breaks the albums out. Now, that might be iTunes' fault, because iTunes...
has their own special managing way.
Yeah, and sometimes it makes it rather difficult for other systems to kind of figure out where things belong.
It's almost as if they do that on purpose. Weird.
Almost. But the last big thing that I can definitely sit there is, if I was interested in moving over to Microsoft, the Microsoft phone, I am way too invested in iTunes right now. That's going to be, to me, I can sit here and safely say, Google's going to have to really wow me with Android if I'm going to go through the pain and suffering that
music.
Will be. Yeah, which honestly, like, that's what I use my iPod Touch for. I listen to music all the time. I buy expensive headphones. I plug it into everything. I listen to a lot of music.
Theoretically, you didn't have a lot of music. You know, you got a couple hundred songs, you know, enough where it's not a ridiculous pain.
Windows Phone, it would be good. It's a good phone. If you don't use a ton of apps and you don't use a ton of music, it's really easy to navigate. It looks really nice. It's a solid phone. Battery life isn't fantastic. But, you know, as long as you're not a super user constantly doing stuff with it, kind of like I am right now, it works really well. It's kind of heavy, but, like, whatever. unless you, like, can't lift a 5-pound, you know, dumbbell more than 2 or 3 times, that shouldn't be a problem. But it's really, I don't know, it feels bulky, but it's nice.
It feels so bulky, but it's nice. All right.
Well, it feels okay.
Maybe solid is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, the iPhone 5 feels like a potato chip. It just does not feel like a potato chip. It feels like something I'm not going to break by accidentally breathing on it wrong.
or chewing on it.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't invest in the wireless charging pad because I'm only going to have it for 2 weeks.
But you could. It does have a wireless charging option.
It makes it pretty difficult to not stick with it, because it does.
Wireless charging. Wow, you should have. Oh, but that would have been like another $35, huh, to return that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah. So I couldn't, you know, but actually the one thing is I had a wall charger and it comes with the cable. It charges my super nice mouse. It charges my Kindle Paperwhite and it charges my phone.
That's
pretty cool,
pretty nice.
To be able to have. Yeah, to have one charging unit that does all three, because it's just a micro USB charger. It's super simple, and it does everything. And so some of the annoyances that I've gladly overlooked with Apple over the years, like, you know, your 32-pin cables, you know, they come to sharp contrast as soon as you actually try out the other systems. And,
I am so glad you're having this experience. I feel like you're growing as an individual right now.
I know.
This is why students should go to college and live in the dorms.
Yeah. It's going to be so. You know what the worst part about this is, James? Now it's not going to matter what phone I have at the end of it. I'm going to be upset. I'm not going to be happy. Because it's all the little annoyances that I know. Why can't we just put all these cool things together into one phone and have it work?
Because there are such things as patent lawsuits.
I know. Jeez. Yeah. And it's so funny because it's like, you know, iTunes and what iTunes offers between music and movies and everything is such a fundamental, or my music collection is such a fundamental part of what I do. And Apple does it so well that it's like, you know, it's not like Google Contacts, where what sold me on Google Contacts was the exportability of it, or it could works with everything. It's cross-platform compliant. Whereas there's nothing really I felt that compared, and it was good as anything else, if not better. Whereas with like iTunes, I know people complain about it all the time, but I don't. I like I when it comes to music, I and my media, I do like it all to be centralized and just be able to click a couple buttons. And I don't know, maybe I've always had good enough computers, but it's always worked very well for me. I've not gotten any thrill out of fighting with VLC, and yeah, and I fight with VLC. I've never fought with iTunes, and except when you're trying to export it to other devices.
By design,
but it's not like VLC is any more friendly when it comes to that. It's just the cool part about VLC is it'll play anything anytime.
Yeah,
and which is why I've got it pinned to my taskbar, because if I need it for something, I've got it. You know, I got a couple more things that I want to try out with this, and you know, I don't know, maybe. You know, I'm not totally resigned to I'll never come back to or I won't come back to it for this phone, because I still got to try out the iPhone 5 and I still got to try out the Samsung Galaxy S. But you know, so far
the 4S,
920,
right?
Yeah, the 3GS.
Yeah, there we go. The 3GS.
You know, the
man,
the,
I wish that the Nexus was coming out within a month. That way you could try.
I know.
Ah, that'd be so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hear that's a phone to try. But, you know, leave it to Google to make an announcement, because they want to be a part of everyone else's party with an unspecified ship date. And, you know,
whatever. They're bad, man.
If it's not around, it's not around.
It's, you know, and I'm not going to reward bad behavior. You announce it without any ship dates, I'm not gonna wait for you. Sorry.
That's funny.
But yeah, so I'll probably give a final grade of some sort next week. The big test for me will be I gotta leave my iPod home for a day or two. Yeah, no, yeah. I can't do that because then I can't return it. it's like
will
the one
it
thing
blend?
I said, don't let me, I can't do that. I specifically asked, what can't I do with this? And they said, drop tests. no, I'm going to have to leave my leave my iPod Touch home for a day or two.
Do you have work tomorrow?
Yes.
Bummer. Yeah, starting tomorrow, dude. You just got to do it.
Tuesday. I'm going to bring it with me tomorrow.
Okay.
Because I still haven't figured out my podcasting situation. Situation. So
well, that's why you got to leave it home, so that you have, you know... It hurts. You'll have the desire to do it.
That's why I will leave it home on Tuesday.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Give you a day.
Because technically, I have until not Friday, but the Friday after to return it. So I'm only 3 days into a 14-day period.
Cool.
If I hold on to my iPod Touch till Wednesday, just so I figure out my whole life, I think I'll be fine.
Fair enough. That's cool. But, yeah, you're still in the honeymoon stage. But
yeah.
Well, you'll never really leave it in 14 days. That's awesome. Very cool. Yeah. That's exciting. I'm kind of jealous, you know. I wish that I could do the same thing. Not going to. I did play with an Android tablet this weekend a little bit, which was pretty fun. Of course, he had it was an Asus one. He had a Nintendo simulator on it, so I actually just played Nintendo games. I didn't actually play with the tablet, because that was like the only app he had really had installed on there. So I guess if you have that app installed, do you really need another one? I didn't get it. You know, it was interesting. It was fun, but very cool. Very cool. Thanks for sharing. Well, believe it or not, we managed to fill up almost 2 hours.
That's how we roll.
Yeah, not bad at all. So I think actually I'm going to we're gonna end it on that high note.
Okay.
I think. Just because. So yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait to hear more. You should, you know, keep notes as you have little experiences and keep sharing. This will be a little featurette, probably not that long next week.
Yeah,
but
probably
definitely
not.
You know, it'll be good as we get going. Very cool. Very cool. So there you go. Self-driving cars. Microsoft Office is coming, kind of. DC Comics is figuring it out. Obama won. Romney lost in more ways than just the election. And Windows Phone 8. Not horrible. How about that for a tagline? turns out looks nice.
Yeah.
But there you
You know,
go.
it does.
Cool.
It's good.
Awesome.
That's good design at work. Okay, I gotta give him credit. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us on this post-election podcast. My name is James Furlow, and my brother, who is still undecided in cell phones, is Matthew Furlow. So we will talk next time.
It's probably a good thing you cut me off on the politics discussion, because obviously I was getting all worked up again.
I
It was a
can.
good time to change directions, because I only had about a minute and a half left in me before I just